and the top half of his impressive back, not covered by the comforter. I frowned, doing a scan of my internal organs. Nary a flutter or surge of excitement. Huh. But then he stretched, and the butterflies in my stomach went from zero to red alert in no seconds. Staring wide-eyed at the rippling muscles of his back, I held my breath and waited, my brain frantic. What will I say? I batted that thought away, the answer obvious. I'd tell him the truth. I'd served him while he'd been drunk. That was entirely my fault. And when he couldn't give me the name of anyone who could take him off my hands, and after I'd ascertained he wasn't in danger of alcohol poisoning, I'd brought him here to sleep it off. Easy. But what if he... I batted that thought away before it fully formed. I wasn't a soothsayer. I didn't take note of the Ides of March. I couldn't predict the future. And if life had taught me anything, it was to avoid tying myself in knots by worrying about a future I had no control over. I lived quietly, sedately, conservatively in the present, which typically meant minimal turmoil or disruption. Rex would wake up and I'd deal with it, and then I'd take him wherever, and that was that, end of this bizarre story. After stretching, Rex didn't wake up. He turned to his other side, hugged the pillow tighter, and kept on sleeping. I covered my eyes with an arm, thankful for the reprieve. I wanted to be up and dressed and ready to go by the time he woke up. I'd had big plans for today. Well, big plans relative to what I considered big plans, none of which had included me hosing out and shampooing the interior of my car as the sun rose behind me, and then sleeping until I turned my head and squinted at my alarm clock. Just past noon. I had things to do, holiday markets to prepare for, cauldron mug special orders to make and ship before Halloween, Christmas tree ornaments to glaze and fire, and so on. But first, another shower, and breakfast, and coffee. It is my hypothesis that a proper hot shower, proper meaning excellent water pressure and temperature near scalding, equated to a bonus hour of sleep in terms of refreshing one's mind and spirit. And good coffee makes everything better. Mindful to grab a change of clothes before heading into the bathroom, I stole another glance at Rex, debating whether or not to leave him a note. He would be disoriented when he woke up, and I didn't want him worrying about where he was. Ultimately, I decided against it. Writing out a note would take me just as long as a shower. But I did leave him a glass of water and two pain relievers next to his mattress, just in case. Once inside the bathroom, I eyeballed the toothbrush I'd used on him last night, wondering if I should throw it away now or later. He'll want to brush his teeth again when he wakes up, I think. And maybe he could take it with him? It was new from the package, and it seemed a shame to waste $4 on a toothbrush only used once. Unsurprisingly, the shower was divine, and I likely took longer than necessary, but the indulgence helped clear the cobwebs from my brain. As I dressed, I reordered the mental to-do list, prioritizing the custom orders from my Etsy shop over the holiday market inventory, and calculating how much sleep I could miss over the next 3 days to make up the studio time I'd lost this morning. Leaving the bathroom, I tossed my dirty clothes in the hamper by the closet containing my efficiency washer and dryer. But then, just as my stomach gave a grumble, I heard the rustle of sheets. Peeking at Rex, I watched as he stretched again, his big body flexing and shifting on the too small air mattress. I held my breath, certain he would wake up now. I waited. And I waited. And I waited some more. False alarm. He didn't wake up. Huh. I started the coffee, retrieved the newspaper from outside, and then returned to the kitchen to cook breakfast. After a brief debate, I decided to splurge and use my celebration/commiseration bacon. Some people celebrate an event or good fortune with a nice bottle of wine. Similarly, they commiserate bad fortune over a nice bottle of wine. I celebrated/commiserated with fancy bacon from the farmer's market. I had no reason to celebrate this afternoon, what with my car stinking like puke and my morning plans ruined, but Rex would definitely wake up hungover. Greasy foods like bacon, fried eggs, hash browns, sausage, and buttered toast were all excellent for hangovers. If it made him feel even a little bit better, $21 in bacon was a sacrifice I was willing to make. Food made everything but our eggs, because there's nothing worse than cold eggs. I put his plate in the oven, set on warm, and ate my hash browns, toast, and sausage. Then I read the paper, frowning at the clock at intervals. An hour passed. Then another. He stretched a few more times, all false alarms. Should I wake him up? I couldn't go to the studio until he left my apartment. Pacing to the kitchen and bringing my paper with me, I leaned against the countertop and tried to focus on reading the fine newsprint, but restlessness plagued me. How long is he going to sleep? But then, just as I was about to resort to making loud noises with pots and pans, he stretched, and this time it was followed by a grunt. Straightening away from the countertop and lowering the newspaper I hadn't actually been reading, I lifted my chin so I could see him over the mid-century lounge chair in the living room between us. A second later, he grunted again. I stiffened. He was rousing. I exhaled relief and inhaled mild trepidation.
What time is it?
The deliciously deep, sleep-roughened question made lovely heat bloom in my stomach, but I shoved the sensation away. I would not ogle the man. He was in my charge and deserved patience and kindness, not objectification. Erecting a nurturing, focused force field to block my lusty instincts, I studied him. He blinked several times. Clearly, he was doing his darndest to keep his eyes open against the stinging afternoon brightness of the room. It's 2-ish, 2:11 in the afternoon, if you want to be precise. I turned my back to him, picking up my spatula and flipping on the stovetop. Cracking 4 eggs, then another, then a 6th, because he was a huge giant of a man, I scrambled the yolks and whites in the pan. He grunted again, but then silence stretched, long enough for me to finish cooking the scrambled eggs and add a fair amount of shredded cheddar cheese on top. I resisted the urge to turn around. My apartment was small, and if I'd been in his situation, I would want some privacy during the first painful moments of sobriety.
Did you?
He started haltingly. When he didn't finish the thought, I prompted, "Yes?" Careful to keep my words light and soft, knowing he must be suffering a terrible headache. Likewise, I was careful to make as little noise as possible as I removed the skillet from the burner and spooned the eggs onto 2 waiting plates, loading his up. See? Even in a hurry, I can nurture.
"Never mind,"
he muttered. "Are you hungry?" I set the plates down on my tiny table by the glass door, which led out to the patio where I'd hosed him off last night. Careful to keep my eyes averted, wanting to give him as much privacy as possible, I hurried back to the kitchen on bare feet, debating whether I should take the rest of his breakfast out of the oven now or later. I made eggs, bacon, sausage, hash browns, and toast. Greasy is good for hangovers. Feed him, drive him wherever, get to the studio, and get to work. Sheets rustled.
"You feel okay?"
he asked. The question wasn't odd, but there was an odd note in his voice as he asked it. I paused before giving him the truth. "I feel fine, thanks." I felt tired, sore from a double shift yesterday, plus supporting his weight as I prepped him for bed, plus cleaning out the car and not going to sleep until after sunrise. But I was, in general, all things considered, fine. I would feel better once I finished making those cauldron mugs at the studio, but I didn't share that either. My brain preoccupied with rushing through the next half hour as quickly as possible, I glanced at him. Rex had sat up and the sheet had pooled around his waist. His chest was bare because after he'd thrown up all over my car, I couldn't let him sleep in pukey clothes. Presently, ignoring his scandalously sexy forearms, I focused on his pale features. His eyes closed, his face drawn. Rex seemed to be in pain. Poor guy. A pang of guilt had my chest feeling tight. I needed to stop rushing him. Open studio hours were over at 10 tonight, but I could bring some of my projects home, work on slip casting here, cleaning up leather hard bisqueware. No biggie. You don't have to eat if you don't want to. I gentled my voice further. There's pain relievers next to the bed if you want to go back to sleep. He opened his eyes, but didn't look at me. In fact, as I watched him cast his attention all over the room, I felt certain he was pointedly not looking at me. Huh. Is he embarrassed? A burst of compassion and care warmed me. But then, in a tone that felt like a verbal slap across the face, he demanded,
"Just give me my things."
I straightened my spine. Wait. Wait a minute. Is he angry? Yes, he was angry. Angry and not looking at me. I knew Rex. I'd basically been his stalker for 13 years. In all that time, I'd cataloged the various shades of his taciturn tones. 90% of the time, he sounded just plain grumpy to the untrained ear. Whereas I knew the difference between a deadpan, dispassionate delivery and an angry, seething set-down. He'd just employed the latter. My stomach and heart switched places. The realization leaving me cold and, quite frankly, stunned. It took me a moment, studying the irritated glint in his eyes and the way his jaw ticked, before finally managing to parrot, "Your things?"
"Yes, my things. Now."
He's mad. At me. Really, really mad. I exhaled a silent breath that burned in my chest and throat. What a spoiled brat. I mean, yes, I'd served him 1.5 beers while he'd been drunk. Fine. Yeah, I could understand him being upset about that. But he'd barfed all over my car. Had I complained? No. I told him it was no big deal, begged him not to feel bad, then I'd taken care of his sloppy, drunk ass. I'd brushed his teeth and sacrificed $21 in bacon this morning to help him feel better. The blobfish. He wanted to leave now? Fine by me. He could call a cab or an Uber to deal with his ungrateful, no longer sexy forearms. I'd wasted enough of my day waiting around for him to wake up. Sliding my teeth to the side, I glared at his stupid, handsome face, where he still sat on the air mattress I'd blown up without a pump, using only the air in my lungs. I watched as he frowned at my futon, where I'd slept, and then back at his place on the floor. No use prolonging the inevitable. I crossed to the closet where my washer and dryer were stored, yanked back the curtain, and pulled out his freshly laundered clothes. Then, pushing down all my ridiculous, hot, erratic feelings of disappointment, I really had no right to the feelings in any case, I walked to him and held out his clothes. "Here you go," I said, wiping all emotion from my expression.
"Thanks,"
he snapped, wearing a scowl as he snatched the laundry from my fingers. bored, bleary eyes flickered to my face for the first time since he'd awoken. Almost immediately, he reared back, doing a double take as his hand holding the clothes slowly lowered to his lap. When he left, I was going to eat all that bacon. No bacon for Rex. He blinked at me, staring. I stared right on back. The angry lines around his mouth, eyes, and on his forehead smoothed, his gaze seeming to grow in confusion and shrink in ire. He stared for so long, I couldn't help but feel uncomfortable under his poking perusal. I shifted my weight from one foot to the other, an acute urge to fill the silence pushing thoughtless words from my mouth. "Sorry they're wrinkled," I said, crossing my arms and removing myself a few steps. I gestured to the bundle of laundry on his lap. "I don't have any outfits that require an iron, so I don't own one." Rex continued staring at me, like I was something strange, or I might explode, or I'd spoken in tongues. But then he blurted,
"Who are you?"
Chapter 5. What's terrible is to pretend that second rate is first rate. To pretend that you don't need love when you do, or you like your work when you know quite well you're capable of better. Doris Lessing, The Golden Notebook. Oh, sigh. I pressed my lips together, irritated with myself that even after everything last night and so far today, I still felt a modicum of disappointment upon receiving irrefutable proof that Rex McMurtry had no idea who I was. Not drunk, not sober, not in a bar, not in a car, not in my apartment in the middle of the day with excellent lighting. Abruptly tired, I rubbed my forehead and asked, "How much do you remember about last night?" His eyes, still hooked on my face, narrowed.
"You brushed my teeth and hosed me down."
That pulled an exhausted smile out of me. "Yes." I gestured to the sheet and comforter covering his bottom half. "I had to preserve your modesty."
"My..."
He looked at his lap, and then his chest, the wrinkles on his forehead deepening.
"We..."
He motioned between us.
"Didn't sleep together?"
What the... What? No! I lifted my hands to ward off the offending suggestion. God, no! You passed out on the air mattress and I slept on my futon. I turned and ducked my head, moving back to the kitchen and scratching my suddenly itchy neck. What kind of a person sleeps with someone who is incapacitated, or even contemplates that? I realized I was muttering out loud and slammed my mouth shut, hoping he hadn't heard me. I sensed his eyes on my back following me as I moved around the kitchen and prayed my cheeks didn't look as red as they felt. It took a lot for me to be scandalized, and I'd just been officially scandalized.
"I know you,"
he said, still sounding hostile.
"We know each other. How do I know you?"
In my peripheral vision, I saw Rex begin to stand, and I fought the urge to cover my eyes with my hands. He didn't stand, thank goodness, but instead peeked under the sheet, as though to confirm he still wore underwear. His bare chest was one thing, and what a glorious thing it was. But I'd taken great pains last night to not see anything else. However, all this delaying on my part to tell him how we knew each other was verging on ridiculous. I needed to fill him in so he'd stop wondering and asking. I paced back over to him, stared him straight in the eye, and said plainly, "Yes, we know each other." He continued to eye me speculatively.
"What's your name?"
"Abigail, or Gail, but people call me Abby these days." My name seemed to give him no answers.
How do we know each other? Why don't I remember you? Did I hit my head?
I opened my mouth, not immediately speaking as I sorted through what to tell him first. That I'd been his bartender last night, or that we'd known each other since we were 5. Rex's intelligent stare, now sharp with wakefulness, scoured me, probably looking for clues as to my identity. Surrendering to the fact that I should just tell him the whole truth and get it over with, his eyes abruptly cut to mine, wide and filled with some emotion I couldn't name.
"Hold up, hold up."
He licked his lips and croaked.
"Are we engaged?"
Did he say, "Are we engaged?" Or did he say, "Are we outraged?" That's a hard one. I could do nothing but stare at him as I pondered alternatives to what I'd heard. The question so ludicrous I was certain I'd gotten it wrong. Barney assuaged? Lars sees a train. Far we upstaged? While I debated the potential alternatives, Rex's eyes lowered to my midsection. I followed his line of sight. Ah, my grandmother's ring. I wore it on my left ring finger.
"I asked you to marry me, didn't I?"
He gaped, his brain clearly working overtime. "No takes backsies," I sing-songed before I could catch myself, wagging a finger and turned to my little kitchen table. The part of me who'd cleaned up his vomit this morning just to have to deal with his rudeness, a devil on my shoulder, if you will, had no problem playing along and playing tricks. Whereas another part of me wanted to apologize and immediately clarify his technically true, misleading recollection of last night. My gaze flickered to him, and I saw his eyes were still on me, shell-shocked. Settling my elbow on the table and tapping my chin, I couldn't resist adding, "I think I'd like a spring wedding." I ignored the strings of guilt plucked by my conscience, the devil pointing out that Rex hadn't been very nice either. Real mature. Maybe someone will do the same thing to you one day, and how will you like that? I squirmed. Sometimes my conscience was a real killjoy. Rex's mouth dropped open, his eyebrows inching higher, and it was everything I could do to hold in the laughter, unkind though it was. But then I couldn't, and I laughed. It was clear he actually believed me and was frantically trying to figure out how to extract himself from this situation. Oh, goodness, you should see your face. I wiped at my tears of hilarity, and damn, after the last 12 hours, it felt good to laugh. Come on now, relax. I'm kidding, okay? You and I are not engaged. You can stop freaking out. Grinning, I watched him, waiting for his relief. He didn't look relieved.
So, we're not engaged?
No. I wrinkled my nose at the preposterous thought. We're not engaged. He nodded, his frown persisting. Rex looked distracted, but strangely not at all relieved as far as I could tell. My smile waned as I studied him. Despite my past as a Rex stalker, I couldn't make heads or tails of his current expression and had absolutely no idea what he was thinking. But it has been over 10 years. He averted his eyes, a strange, stiff-looking sort of smile on his face.
"I reckon,"
he started, cleared his throat, and started again.
"I reckon I'm a little turned around after drinking so much last night."
Rex breathed a shaky laugh, and if I wasn't mistaken, he sounded contrite. My irritation and indignation suddenly dissolved. Poor guy. I shouldn't have teased him. "You didn't get enough sleep and you don't like upheaval," my brain reminded me. I pushed the excuses away, determined to be more patient with the poor, hungover colossus. "Go change." I pointed to the bathroom door behind him. And then eat something. I'll tell you what happened, but you really should eat something. Once more, he wouldn't meet my eyes in a way that felt purposeful. But this time it also struck me as embarrassed. Now he looked embarrassed, and that just made me feel worse for him all over again. That's what you get for listening to Devils on Your Shoulders. Have classic Disney cartoons taught you nothing? Wanting to ease his discomfort, I ate a bit of bacon like I hadn't a care in the world. I drank a drop of coffee. I picked up the newspaper and pretended to read it while he loitered in the center of my living room wearing almost nothing but a sheet. I felt his eyes on me, but I just let him look. Maybe he wouldn't stay for breakfast, and that was fine. Maybe he would, and that was also fine. I told myself that whatever he wanted was fine. Except his stare persisted. He remained immobile for a full minute, and I grew uncomfortable under the doggedness of his gaze. So I sent him a quick look and frown, like, "Come on, man, snap out of it. Go get dressed and stop staring at me in my own apartment." Finally, he seemed to shake himself, tearing his eyes away and moving to stand. Not wanting to take a chance that I'd be treated to more skin than his chest and back, I lifted the newspaper higher, blocking him from view. I suspected last night had mostly cured me of my lifelong Rex obsession. The last thing I needed was a lusty eyeful of Rex's gorgeous body rekindling anything. I heard nothing for a bit. No sound of him moving or crossing to the bathroom, and I told myself again not to look at him. But please, Lord, don't let him notice the massive leaning tower of ugly quilts in the corner. Then he asked,
"Who undressed me?"
My fingers tightened on the paper. "I did."
"You did."
He didn't sound angry, more like disbelieving.
"Just you? By yourself?"
"Yes, but I didn't see anything." I kept my tone light and airy. It wasn't a big deal because I'd made sure it wasn't a big deal. Even so, undressing someone is a big deal, no matter how many prophylactic measures one takes to ensure it's not.
"You didn't see anything?"
He spoke around a yawn. I kept my eyes closed and it was dark. I lowered the newspaper so I could reach for my coffee. I walked you over there and leaned you against the counter. I lifted my coffee mug toward the kitchen before taking a sip. Then I turned off all the lights, closed my eyes, and took your clothes off.
"In the dark,"
he repeated flatly, but I detected the note of incredulity. Another rush of heat surged up my neck and cheeks, so I lifted the newspaper again. "Yes, in the dark. And don't worry, I wore gloves."
"Gloves?"
"Yes."
"You wore gloves when you touched me, when you took my clothes off."
Now his deadpan delivery was laced with amusement. The amusement only served to fluster me further, and I was so, so grateful for the newspaper blocking me from view. "Yes."
"What kind of gloves?"
"Oven gloves. They're like oven mittens, but they have holes for your, fingers." "Ugh, Abby!" I sunk lower in my chair, rolling my eyes at myself. I don't usually say all the wrong things and make things awkward, but when I do, it's with the former man of my dreams. Finally, I heard the rustle of fabric and his padding footsteps as he walked away. A moment later, the sound of a door snicking shut met my ears, and I heaved a giant, silent sigh of relief. He was finally gone. I mean, he was in my bathroom, but at least he wasn't right here. I used the time Rex dressed in the bathroom to regain my composure and give myself a pep talk. I also added his eggs to the warm plate in the oven that contained the bacon, sausage, toast, and hash browns. When he exited the bathroom, I didn't look up, keeping my eyes affixed to the paper, but I could detect in my peripheral vision that he was now fully clothed. He loitered by the bathroom door and folded the sheet that had preserved his modesty. Rex said nothing, and I was acutely aware of him inspecting the interior of my tiny apartment. What did he see? I wondered. It doesn't matter. He's leaving soon, and you'll never see him again. That wasn't necessarily true. I'd see him again, on TV and in magazines, just never in person. Like before, his staring went on, and I began squirming in my seat, again growing uncomfortable in the silence. So I broke it. Do you want coffee? I also have orange juice, if you're interested. Restless, I stood from the table and walked the short distance to the kitchen. Reaching inside a cabinet while also grabbing the coffee pot, I pulled out a mug and let the carafe hover over it.
I can't have either,
he said evenly, now normal terse instead of angry terse, his voice just freaking lovely.
Water, please.
I turned away to hide my mild surprise. First of all, he'd said please, so I suppose that meant polite Rex had returned. Secondly, he couldn't have coffee or OJ, but he could drink enough alcohol to make himself sick. That seemed odd. Regardless, I grabbed him a glass and filled it with water from the tap while he did whatever he was doing. When I turned, expecting him to still be loitering by the bathroom or hovering next to the kitchen table, he stood directly behind me. Oh! Giving a little start, I blinked furiously, took a step back, and shoved the water glass at his chest. Here.
Thank you.
He must have picked up the two pain relievers I'd left next to his bed because he now popped them in his mouth. He then drank the water, every last drop of the large glass. I couldn't help but watch him with bemusement. Thirsty? I asked. He nodded. I held out my hand for the glass. More water?
Yes, please.
He passed it over. His hand was so big it was impossible to accept the cup normally without touching him. The Rex spell wasn't exactly broken, and I wasn't willing to reignite the smoldering fire, mostly snuffed out by last night's vomit dousing. Thus, I accepted the cup by the bottom, careful not to touch him, and turned for the sink.
Sorry, I assumed the worst,
he said to my profile. I knew Rex to be a genuine person, so it was easy to accept his apology. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry I tricked you about being engaged. That wasn't very nice. If I woke up in a stranger's apartment, I'd be freaking out. I think you're handling it quite well.
How do we know each other?
My shoulders felt heavy. We went to school together.
Really?
Once more, he sounded disbelieving. If my crush flame had still been an inferno, his reaction might have singed. That's right.
When?
When what? I flipped off the faucet and held out the refilled cup. He accepted the water but didn't drink it.
College? High school?
Oh. I walked around him and returned to the table. Elementary, middle, and high school. He coughed like he was choking on this information.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. Luckily, I'd already stuffed down the disappointment at not being recognized, at being so entirely forgettable to this man. Thus, I felt no upheaval now, just a numb sort of acceptance. Later, I would feel sad. Perhaps I'd wallow, throw myself a bacon pity party, but not now. I lifted the paper and turned to the events section, scanning for the Christmas market calendar. I'd signed up for a number of holiday homecraft markets.
You don't sound like you're from Texas.
I lost most of my accent when I moved to Austin from Allenbach. In the events calendar section of the newspaper, I found the three markets I'd signed up for and made a mental note to add two more listed that I'd never heard of before.
we ever talk?
Once or twice. I refolded the paper, picked up my coffee, and took a sip. It was no longer hot. Briefly, I considered heating it back up in the microwave, but then ultimately decided to set it back down. I wasn't one of those people who tossed cool coffee. Coffee is expensive. Microwaving it for 30 seconds is cheap.
Once or twice? In 13 years?
His tone pulled a smile out of me. He sounded bothered by this news, and I could guess why. Rex was the egalitarian sort. Liked to think he treated everyone the same, no matter who they were. I suspected this news likely made him question his perception of himself. I suppressed the smile, not wanting him to think I was laughing at him. We didn't move in the same circles, I said, hopefully communicating that it wasn't a big deal. A spark of something flashed behind his eyes, making me think I'd said exactly the wrong thing.
Did we have classes together?
A touch of frustration entered his voice. A few, I answered honestly, studying the frown lines between his eyebrows. For Rex, who rarely lost his cool, he looked pretty darn upset. We were in Mrs. Gold's kindergarten class together, and third grade and fourth, a few classes in seventh, I think just shop class third period sophomore year in high school, but I was really quiet. His eyes narrowed.
Were you the only girl in shop class?
No, there were four of us, Becky, Tamara, Mary, and me. His forehead cleared, and I realized until this moment he hadn't believed me about us going to school together.
I remember Becky and Tamara,
he said thoughtfully.
What did Mary look like?
Short blonde hair. She was on the
soccer team, that's right.
Holding the water, he meandered over to the table and pulled out the only other chair, his eyes never leaving mine as he sat. But then he frowned all over again, tilting to the side to inspect my wee little table.
Is this table tall?
He noticed my table. Yes, it is. I smiled, sitting straighter. I loved this table. As someone with long legs, it had been a splurge, but so worth it. No one had ever noticed before. And if there was one thing I loved talking about, it was all the cool gadgets, furniture, and fixtures I'd found to make my life as a woman giant easier. You can get tall tables from the Netherlands. They're very tall people. I leaned back in my chair. It drives me crazy when my legs hit
the underside of the table.
He finished. Exactly. My smile widened. Very few people had this problem, but it was a problem. I was forever vigilant and careful when sitting at a restaurant or at a friend's house not to bump the top of the table. It was an exercise in coordination I did not possess naturally. Rex also reclined, his eyes dipping to my mouth and then up again.
How tall are you?
6'1", I said on a sigh, feeling my smile drop on one side with the admission. I'd been 6'1" since seventh grade.
6'1"?
Rex wrinkled his nose and cast me a sidelong glance.
Shorty.
That pulled a surprised laugh out of me, and I picked up my coffee cup again. I can honestly say no one has ever called me shorty before.
Maybe you should.
Rex's attention returned to the tabletop. He seemed to both frown and smile before giving his head a little shake. Greedily, I memorized the shape of the almost smile. He didn't wear smiles often, not even as a kid. As such, I couldn't read his smiles at all. Maybe I should what? Rex cleared his throat.
How tall is your fiancé?
It took me a few seconds to process his words and reject the alternative, bow fall whiz bore Beyoncé? My what?
Your fiancé, does he live here?
He grabbed his water cup from the table and gestured to my lap. Frowning, I glanced down to where his eyes focused. Oh, this. I slipped my grandmother's ring off my left ring finger and pushed it on the middle finger of my right hand. Occupational hazard. It's my mom's. I mean, was my mom's. And it was her mother's, too. I wear it to work to, you know, discourage people from... I waved my hand in front of me, hoping he'd catch my drift.
You're not engaged?
I couldn't say. Nothing on Earth, or in the universe, or in any alternate reality or dimension would ever, or could ever, convince me to enter into the chains of wedlock ever again. Hell no. As long as I breathe and eat cheese, never again. Instead, I chuckled softly and said, no, that's never going to happen.
Why not?
I flung my fingers around in the air, hoping once more he'd catch my drift.
Just what?
I huffed, mock glaring at him. I did not remember Rex ever talking this much or asking so many questions. Perchance I did not know him as well as I thought. Or perhaps he'd grown chatty in his late 20s. Regardless, I had no desire to confess the truth, so I offered a perfunctory, people.
People.
His face didn't seem to know whether it wanted a frown or a smile, and I couldn't read him at all. I don't think those kinds of relationships are for me, I confessed, squirming again. I didn't even ask my friends the kinds of questions he currently asked me. I was more of a let folks volunteer what they want and don't push kind of person, which was probably why I made such an excellent bartender.
What kinds of relationships? Married relationships?
Any of those types of relationships, I said, under my breath, scanning the newspaper for a distraction.
So you're not in a relationship?
My gaze cut to his, and I found him examining me while he sipped his water, his expression not grumpy and, therefore, to me, inscrutable. I'm in plenty of relationships with plenty of people. Friend relationships, business relationships, working relationships, and they all suit me better than the kind of relationship you're referring to. Yeah, I was being weird and sensitive about the whole thing, but I was just so freaking tired of everyone I knew, not just Kaylee, but all my friends and acquaintances, pushing me to date, setting me up when I'd specifically told them I had no interest.
Do any of those people own that toothbrush in there?
He inclined his head toward the bathroom while a wee little smile curved his lips.
I'm just asking, because I want to be prepared for any jealousy-prone significant others who might let themselves in and discover us sitting together at your tall table.
Yeah, right. No one had ever felt enough about me to be jealous. Not that I would want someone to be jealous. But, you know what I mean. No, that's your toothbrush from last night. I responded flatly. He watched me for a long moment, sipping more of his water, and the silence settled between us for another uncomfortable stretch. I didn't care. He was sitting in my apartment. I refused to feel a pressing need to fill it this time. Except, what about you? I blurted the question, grabbing my mug to take a sip of coffee. I then remembered it was cold. Blech.
What about me?
Are you engaged? Men aren't marked when it happens like women are, so you could be sitting here engaged to someone and I'd have no idea. If that's the case, I charged your phone while you were asleep. It was dead when we got here, so I think it's still off, but you should call her and let her know you're okay. On a whim, I decided to punctuate my statements by drinking my cool coffee and glaring at him over the rim of my cup. Take that, nosy McNoserton. He returned my glare with a guileless expression.
I am not engaged, and there's no one to call.
I felt myself soften again. That's what you said last night.
Pardon?
You said there was no one to call last night when you were drunk. The introspection within his stare intensified, and it felt weighty somehow.
Why don't you tell me what happened last night?
Pulling my legs under me, I considered where to start. Well, let's see. You walked into my bar and...
Your bar?
I'm a bartender. You walked in and I served you, not realizing you were drunk. I should have realized, but I'd been acting so stupid I was ashamed of myself. So as I told the story, I tried to stick only to the facts, not wanting to editorialize my actions or make excuses for myself. Nor did I mention his drunken marriage proposal or that he'd called me beautiful. But I did explain how much he had to drink and that it had taken 4 people to load him into my car. Almost finished with the hard part, I tucked my hair behind my ear and said, "Once you were all buckled up in the car, I was going to drive you to your parents' house, but then you threw up." Rex's eyes bugged out of his head.
"Pardon me?"
He seemed genuinely surprised, and I cringed inwardly. I didn't want him feeling guilty about this, and I should have relayed this part a bit better. "You threw up. In the car. All over yourself. But it was honestly no big deal, and probably my fault for serving you while you were already drunk." His face slackened with plain surprise, and he set the glass down on the table, his forehead coming to his hand. I'd never seen him so disconcerted. I twisted my fingers as my stomach twisted all on its own. "It's fine. I wiped it down last night, left the doors open for it to air out." Rex gave me an unguarded look loaded with dismay. I smiled to show how unperturbed I was, adding lightly, "Don't worry about it. Most of it landed on the window and dash, and, you know, your pants, which was why I had to hose you off, undress you, and wash your clothes."
"So that's why you undressed me?"
"I couldn't let you sleep in pukey clothes." I cringed at the thought. "But like I said, I undressed you in the dark with my eyes closed and while wearing gloves. It was honestly not a big deal at all." He nodded grimly, his chest expanding.
"First, thank you so much. Thank you for bringing me here, hosing me off, letting me sleep on your floor. Thank you. Second, please let me cover the cost of the detailing."
I was shaking my head and waving away his offer as soon as he started making it. Before I could formally reject him, he squinted at me and said,
"I have to insist."
"I think it's going to be okay."
"Abby, we go back a long time."
My right eyebrow arched in surprise. "Excuse me?"
"Good friends like us shouldn't argue."
Staring at him and his deadpan delivery, an inexplicable smile tried to invade my features, but I held it off. "You don't remember me. We're basically strangers."
"After all we've been through? After all we've meant to each other?"
I reared back. "This is the most we've talked to each other, ever."
"You're going to throw my offer back in my face?"
He shook his head, pressing his hand to his chest as though my behavior appalled him, an action that oddly made him look like his Aunt Sally, my Girl Scout leader in middle school. If it weren't for the mischievous and completely foreign-looking tilt to his lips, I might have thought he was serious. Wait, what is happening? Is Rex McMurtry teasing me? A pulse of something hot, pleasurable, and unnerving drove me to my feet. "Okay, fine. I collected my coffee cup and plate, turning so he wouldn't see my involuntary smile or the blush I felt crawling up my cheeks. In all my stalkery stalking, I'd never seen him be playful with anyone. I wasn't sure how I felt about this new facet of his personality, other than I found it irresistible.
Glad that's settled.
His tone returned to normal, no longer judgmental or teasing. I turned from the sink where I left my dishes and crossed my arms. He gazed at me with wide, innocent eyes.
Tell me what happened next.
I already told you. I drove you back here, but we were both covered in it, so I hosed us down outside, then walked you inside.
How'd you manage that?
He inspected my body, obviously sizing me up and likely doubting I could lift him by myself. He was correct. I might lift 50-pound bags of clay on the regular, but Rex was way out of my weight class. You could walk by the time I got you here.
I could.
Not on your own. You needed some help steering, but I didn't have to hold much of your weight.
I see. And that's why you undressed me in the dark.
A weird little shiver raced up my spine, and I turned to wash my discarded dishes. Yes, I wrapped you in a sheet and left you on the floor in the bathroom because you said you were still feeling sick. Finished with the dishes, I placed them on the rack. I then grabbed a towel to dry my hands as I faced him. Then I cleaned up the mess in the car and...
While we're on the topic, let's agree never to mention that again.
Pointing all the fingers of one hand at his neck, he moved his hand back and forth quickly in the universal sign for stop talking about that. It made me smile.
I'll get some guys over here in hazmat suits and it'll be like it never happened. So, you came back here and...
I hosed myself down again. His focus dropped to the table and he frowned.
Okay, makes sense.
He said, his voice oddly gruff. Then I changed into clean pajamas, started the washing machine, blew up the air mattress, and made a bed for you. I returned to the table and sat. When I checked on you in the bathroom, you seemed better, just mostly tired. You asked to brush your teeth, so I got you a toothbrush, but then you couldn't. I mimed brushing one's teeth. You couldn't seem to do it right, and your sheet kept slipping, so I did it for you.
I couldn't brush my own teeth.
Rex covered his face and peeked at me between his fingers. It was as unexpected as it was completely disarming, and a laugh bubbled out of me. This guy was not known for his expressiveness. At best, he was brusque. At worst, like on the field, people called him ruthless and terrifying. So this simple, human, relaxed, adorable action coming from the 6'6" behemoth cracked me up. I realized a bit too late that I'd been laughing for a while, and he was still peering at me from behind his hand. Oh, darn it. I didn't want him to feel weird or bad about it. Helping him out last night had honestly been the very least I could do, considering I'd served him when I shouldn't have. My instinct was to reach over the table and pull his hand from his face, squeeze it, and comfort him, but I hesitated. I'd done a really good job of not touching him at all so far, not even accidental touches. But in order to comfort him, I would have to touch him. On purpose. Get over it, Abby! You'll never see him again after today. Being a good person is more important than your level of comfort or discomfort. Putting my plan into action, I removed his fingers from his face and held them between us on the table, leaning forward. It wasn't like that. Like I said, you were really tired and out of it.
And drunk.
He twisted his hand around and tangled his fingers with mine. My stomach tried to give a little flutter, but I issued a quick smackdown. Mostly you were tired. I helped, that's it. That's all that happened.
And I didn't say anything else to you. During all this, I didn't speak.
Trying not to grimace at the memory of what he'd said last night at the bar and in my car, and how my body slash heart slash mind had been conspiring against me, I slipped my hand out of his. You may have said a few things.
Such as?
It was drunk nonsense, nothing important. I wrinkled my nose. He glared at me.
You always were a terrible liar.
I smiled at his odd teasing. Believe me, I've been a bartender for a long time. You didn't say anything compared to what I've heard from other folks.
So, men ask you to marry them all the time?
Crap. You remember that from last night, do you?
I do.
He seemed to think better of his words and added,
I mean, I remember that.
Actually, yes, I have been proposed to on a number of occasions by drunk people from all walks of life, so you shouldn't feel weird about it.
I'm just one of many, then?
He teased, again. I held off more tummy butterflies by scoffing, and then snorting. Who is this guy? But I couldn't stop my smile. It's nothing. You were drunk. No harm, no foul. I'm just glad. I didn't know how to finish that sentence without admitting too much. Taking a deep breath and having every intention of finishing the thought, I stared at Rex's face. He has such a kind face. Most people would say it was gruff, or ruthless, or stern, but I didn't think so. I'd never been intimidated by the frowns and scowls he typically wore. Which was likely why his behavior today, after realizing I hadn't laid a finger on him last night, the stares, the playfulness, being relaxed, all of it, had struck me as so odd. Maybe he was lonely? I knew what that was like. All his friends were getting married. The news always loved to point out how they were marrying his ex-girlfriends. He lived in Chicago for most of the year, so far away from our hometown. He had so much pressure on him as a pro athlete. Maybe he was loitering in my apartment and conversing with me, asking so many questions because he simply missed home? Maybe he... Rex's stomach grumbled. I flinched, stiffening, and realized I'd been staring at Rex this whole time. I fixed my eyes to my lap as the epic strength of my embarrassed flush spread up my chest, to my neck and cheeks. Sorry. You must be hungry. I shook my head, willing my wits to make a reappearance.
I am.
The softness in his tone only served to deepen my mortification.
But first, tell me what you're glad about.
My mouth hooked to the side as I wrestled my feelings into submission. Stuffing them down, all of them, I shrugged. Oh, just that I'm glad I could be there last night. That's all. Rex seemed to contemplate my statement before saying,
I'm not used to waking up and not knowing where I am. This morning was a first for me. I usually don't drink at all.
Me too. I leaned forward to set my elbows on the table. I mean, I do drink, but this was a first for me too. I'm not in the habit of serving drunk customers or bringing them to my home and hosing them off.
But you brush everyone's teeth?
Yes, obviously. I smiled, grateful he'd chosen to lighten the mood rather than point out what a weirdo I'd been staring at his face. He returned my smile, his soft and warm. See? He's not gruff. He's wonderful.
Uh-oh.
I shot up from the table again, casting aside that last thought. Okay, let me get your breakfast. I left it warming. Happy to be moving and distracted by a task, I walked over to the oven and pulled on my oven mitts. It wasn't until I reached inside the oven that I remembered these were the very same mitts I'd used to undress Rex last night. My stomach misbehaved again, and this time it would not be denied. I tried my best, but it just kept on flittering and twisting and tightening until the crush broke free from the box where I'd stuffed it. It didn't even need to be dusted off. Apparently, though he'd thrown up all over my car and I'd seen him at his worst, Rex's worst was light years ahead of most people's best. And there was nothing I could do about that. Drat. Oh well. I could think of worse things than spending another 23 years crushing on Rex McMurtry from afar.
Chapter 6. I used to believe in forever, but forever's too good to be true. A.A. Milne, Winnie the Pooh.
Hey, you!
Walker's friendly drawl greeted me not 5 seconds after I walked into the Boozy Rancher.
I'm not supposed to see you until Sunday, am I?
Under normal circumstances, that would be correct. I pulled off my jacket, noting that the bar was vacant of customers except Owen. Owen, a dentist and regular, worked a half day every Friday and liked to end his week here with buffalo wings and amaretto sours. I'd tried the combination once. Just once.
You here to eat or pick up a Friday shift?
Eat, I grumbled, walking down the length of the bar to the stool at the end. I have a fly problem.
A what?
Walker placed a cocktail napkin in front of me and then spread his hands to lean against the bar. A fly problem. A fly has taken up residence in my apartment and it is driving me insane. After I'd returned from driving Rex McMurtry to his hotel and out of my life yesterday late afternoon, the fly dive-bombed me while I ate dinner. When I attempted to work on my greenware cauldron mugs, it crashed into my hands like it wanted to live in